Welcome to The Agents Angle, the show that focuses on the world of football and soccer agents, not just in Europe, but around the globe. I'm Jonathan Booker.
And I'm Peter Palaiologos. On the show this week, and with the January transfer window drawing to a close very soon, we'll look at four of the most prevalent clauses clubs use that agents should be aware at this crucial time of year, whether negotiating transfers or player loans.
We also take a look at a worrying trend for many agents and former intermediaries, with increasing reports of players sacking agents and a lot of doubts and confusion over the validity of many existing intermediary representation agreements and contracts.
All that to come on this episode of The Agent's Angle.
And this week is yet another change of plan for myself and my esteemed Antipodean legal colleague, fresh and back from his Asian travels, as we pivot from the planned episode we had lined up on the topic of player care and the agent's world, which we will bring you in due course in the weeks to come. But as we mentioned last week, we're changing the schedule of the show and also the format just a bit, but more of that at the end of this episode. What we're going to do this week is focus on some key areas that are confusing and also concerning many in the football world relating to agent representation agreements and contracts. And this includes not just agents and intermediaries, but also clubs, players and their families.
Yes, Jonathan. Right now, actually, it's quite interesting because in Asia and in Africa, we've got the Nations Cup, some exciting football. And I just got back from Asia. So the Asian Cup in Qatar and then the African Nations Cup in Ivory Coast. So some fantastic new footballers with good profiles coming. So I'm sure a lot of agents are also, besides the window, looking at those competition matches. But there's a lot going on in the agent space. And as an agent, there's two crucial stakeholders that have moved into the space, or part of the space, I should say, families or parents and lawyers, and what role they play with clubs and in bigger transfers. So we will be focusing a lot on those in terms of how they affect agreements with agents, but also transfer agreements.
And it might be worth keeping an eye on the Asia Cup and the African Cup of Nations for who actually pulls out injured or there might be a family emergency, because in a transfer window, there could well be more to it than there seems. But where I want to start today, Peter, should definitely grab the attention of many who are affected by the agent's world. And as we said, clubs, players and their families. And at risk of being accused of over-dramatising the subject, I think it valid to frame it as reports of an increasing trend of agent sackings and players changing agents, notably in recent months, if not recent weeks. Understandably, this is confusing and above all concerning for a lot of agents and former intermediaries. We've received questions about it for the show. I've been asked about it on various occasions, and also I've seen it asked elsewhere at conferences, events and webinars, where the answers haven't always been clear or indeed correct and often somewhat misleading. And yes, this is something caused by the ongoing situation with FFAR, the new FIFA football agent regulations. It would be nice to say it's back on the show by popular demand, but that is likely far from an accurate description. And ultimately, this whole scenario pretty much boils down to validity of representation agreements held by agents and intermediaries with their clients, and whether the client, who's typically a player, can effectively walk away from the agreement or contract, or as some in the media have termed it, sack their agent more easily in light of all this FFAR upheaval. So firstly, I want to have a look at a couple of articles in the media, slightly different, but both with a connection to Manchester United. The first was a widely publicised sacking, and that's the term used by the media, of his agent by former Manchester United player Jesse Lingard. For me, a bit of an enigma of a player, unbelievable on his day, but sadly those days were too infrequent for some clubs, and thus I don't think he's ever really showed consistently what he can do. Now, a lot of the media reported on this, and I'm going to take just one report, and that's from Sky Sports. And Sky Sports reported this as, and I'll quote, "The 31-year-old has sacked his agents, including members of his family, in an attempt to find a new club. And also they reported that, again, quoting Sky, he took the drastic step of legally dissolving the contract. This was notably 11 or 12 days after the implementation of the new NFAR, the National Football Agent Regulations, and indirectly the FFAR in England by the Football Association. Now, that timing could well be a coincidence. We don't know, and I doubt Sky know either. It seems pretty clear from all the reports the player wants to play. And after a reported move to Saudi Arabia fell through, which I think was more down to Saudi Pro League quotas and squad limits, he's understandably frustrated by that situation.
I saw the words, like you mentioned, Jonathan, Jesse Lingard has sacked his agent, including members of his family. When I hear this, I'm concerned. I mean, it's plural. How many family members? Was there an entourage? Who was advising him? But when you have an entourage of advisors, it is a total distraction. And the emphasis is for players to work with licensed agents. And maybe that's the reason why he had to terminate legally. On the point of sacking agents, in the agent world, we use the term termination. The media likes to use sack because that grabs your attention, or sacking. It's become quite common. I have a lot of smaller agents, which I like to call them, or hardworking agents. They're starting to cop the brunt of requests by players to leave or change agents. As many players, and it's also the player's attitude, are becoming impatient or are focused on why are these bigger agents supposedly, or big agencies doing deals or getting more international focus on players. Now, for me, players need to focus on game time, week in, week out, perform, show some X factor, show team manners, and also the ability to the coaches to provide solutions. Good agents, whether small, big, it doesn't matter, are able to piggyback off those performance factors to deliver the next deal or the upgrade. Everything's interrelated.
And the sad thing is there's a lot of stories like this. It's not a rarity. I've spoken to various people, even in the last couple of weeks, not least players and family members, about the impact of the agent license changes. Hence another story that caught my eye, not so acrimonious, where there's a sacking, it would seem. And this time it's a promising young player at Manchester United, not dissimilar to Jesse Lingard when he started to get noticed and attracted agents' attention. And that is Dan Gore. And it's from the Daily Mail. And the headline reads, top agents looking to snap up the 19-year-old who is still represented by his family. And firstly, I would say that any talented player has agents clamouring to sign them up, especially when they are looking at turning 18 and or signing their first pro contract. But as you know, Peter, I'm usually quite hesitant with the Mail and reports on agent matters, but the general gist of big agencies being very interested in this particular player seemed to start last year. I think it was around about mid-September time, with the likes of the Manchester Evening News and quite reliable club-related resources reporting something similar. So this story obviously has legs. Now, interestingly, SEG is one of the agencies that has been mentioned, and that's Erik ten Hag, the United manager's reported representatives. But we've spoken about that link on past episodes, and no doubt we will come back to the topic of agents representing coaches and managers in a future episode. On this, the first thing I would say is that a player being represented by their family is, in my view, not necessarily always a bad thing, if they are the right people to do it. Yes, I would always make the case for an independent third-party agency advisor does bring some benefits at times, but being represented by a family member certainly doesn't seem to have hampered the likes of Jude Bellingham and his brother Job. And on that note, Mark, if you are listening, we would love to hear from you. But back to Dan Gore and the story we're looking at. What I've read and heard, his family seem to be content for him looking to a professional agency to help him move his career forward. And that's understandable. Hence, agent licensing changes could, again, just be a side issue in this story. In England, we did have a lot of relatives register as registered intermediaries post-2015. And before that in England, we had a lot of what are referred to as authorised agents, not licensed agents. There's a very definitive difference there, under the category that used to be called registered close relations, whereby a relative of a player were permitted to represent only that player under slightly different prerequisites and regulations. And before we're accused of sidestepping or missing the widely publicised case of Kylian Mbappe and the representation of him by his mother, given the FFAR licensing changes, we haven't missed it. Over the several months, it's been covered in the media. And again, I think it's pretty safe to say we'll come back to that story as well in a future episode. But agent representation and licensing in France is quite unique, quite specialised, especially when you throw lawyer status into the mix. But with the advent of FFAR, the changes in regulations and agent licensing does seem to have triggered quite a bit of a trend, and it's a worrying trend, of players changing agent representation, whether acrimoniously or diplomatically. And with many intermediaries now not being licensed agents, there are cases where others who are licensed swooping in to take advantage, whether by fair means or foul.
Very interesting observations there, Jonathan. As we've seen, a lot of players like Gore, who's represented by his family, now he's moving to other agencies or big agencies are circling, looking to sign him with the promise of finding him a new platform from which to build. Now, you mentioned Mbappe, you mentioned Bellingham. Haaland's another one where his father's worked with another advisor at the time. So family can work, especially if you're also working with expertise. But now things have changed. Now, two things. It's common for big agencies or names, brand agencies, to come in when a player is about to come out onto their own, onto the stage. Man United, Gore, big prospect, that is a time when a lot of the big agencies will try to pounce. When you're playing at the top level or close to it and you have huge upside, so whether it's 18, 19, 20, 17, doesn't matter. That's where I see a strategy with a lot of the bigger agents try to pounce when they know that this player, like Gore, could be a starter at one of the big clubs. Now, in terms of intermediaries, a lot of intermediaries who didn't pass the exam or didn't have the previous legacy experience can really no longer act. We'll address this a bit later. And many probably refer players to other agents they know or develop a grouping with a licensed agent, someone who did pass the exam, or become consultants to these licensed agents or referrers, or even scouts. Although we know there's limitations, but there's also ways around that. But I will say this, and it's in a lot of media articles. It's here, it's in Europe, it's in Asia, it's in the US, and of course it's in England and the UK, that the messaging on a general level, the narrative is, you have to deal with licensed agents. Everyone's talking about it. Even agents who are licensed are saying if they find out that someone's working with an unlicensed agent, they want FIFA to take action. And FIFA's raised that they may have a hotline about reporting that. Now, families, lawyers, who were the exceptions before, they need a license. That's the push. So we're seeing this transition period, but the narrative is you need to deal with licensed agents.
The huge part in this, though, Peter, is the uncertainty. People are so uncertain about where they stand because we've had FFAR implemented in various stages. Then we've had suspensions. Then we've had clarification, allegedly, on the suspensions. So there's a lot of confusion, and that's understandable. And it's those former registered intermediaries who maybe aren't now licensed agents. They might be sitting the exam in May. They're in a really difficult situation to now know where they stand with those representation agreements and contracts they had before. And as I said, we've been asked the question in messages and emails to the show, and also heard it asked elsewhere along the lines of, if I have a contract or a rep agreement with a player, can the player just walk away if I'm not a licensed agent? And worth noting, I've had players and their family members ask me this as well as agents ask the question. And I'll come back to you, Peter, on this for your more educated and informed view on the exact question in a minute. But for me, this is the way I understand it. And correct me if I'm wrong. But I'll stick with the English scenario now, because we could be here for some weeks discussing all the permutations if we took each transaction on an international dimension, let alone if we took a French dimension, an Italian dimension, or dare I say, a dimension with a link to Germany. So firstly, I've heard a lot of people say, and for that matter, some quite prominent legal names in the situation, that if you aren't a licensed agent in England after the 1st of January 2024, after being registered as an intermediary, then your players could walk away from the agreement and sign with someone else. However, Personally, I don't believe that is necessarily the case, as this is, in my view, a very simplistic, somewhat lazy, and is poor and misleading advice. As firstly, if the intermediary concluded the agreement with the client before the 16th of December 2022, when FIFA ratified these new regulations, that agreement should still be valid under the old RWWI, the regulations on working with intermediaries. However, there is a question mark whether they can still act as an agent if unlicensed, and thus if they can't act as an agent, they may be in breach of the terms of the original agreement and new regulations when applied in combination. Also, there's a further question mark about agreements concluded in the short window between the 16th of December 2022 and the 9th of January 2023, when FIFA announced the new FFAR, if not the period thereafter. Then if the intermediary concluded the agreement after that date, we will go with the 16th of December 2022 for argument's sake, there is an argument that the client could just walk away from the agreement as of the 1st of January 2024 if the intermediary hasn't got licensed agent status from the FA and thus FIFA, as the two licensing requirements are intertwined with agent licensing in England. Then we have the added complication of commercial representation, which, again, correct me if I'm wrong, if it's a separate element from the standard playing rep agreement and there are no conditions referring to maintaining licensed agent status, the agents should be protected there. However, there's also a potential trap here for players, which they need to be aware of, because if there's been underhand tactics employed or just laziness on the agent's part and the agreement wasn't lodged with the football authorities and or didn't contain the terms specified by the likes of the FA to arguably protect the players' rights, there may still be a legally binding agreement in place irrespective of FIFA and FA regulations. And in such cases, the so-called agent is largely untouchable by the likes of FIFA and the FA, if unlicensed. And if the player uses them now, it is the player who could be sanctioned and could still be effectively on the hook for paying the agent under the agreement, but not being able to use them as an agent under the new regulations. So ultimately paying something for nothing. But you're far more informed on these aspects than I am. So what's your opinion on this? And if the topic isn't complicated enough, here's another challenge for you. Try doing it without saying the words, "it depends."
A lawyer finds it difficult without saying "it depends," but I won't say
that's the lawyer's get out clause, isn't it? It depends.
And I'm not here to give legal advice. As we know, this show does not give legal advice. It just gives context, some insights, and general overview. But I'll give some context first, and then I'll answer your question or provide an opinion. The new rules, as acting as a football agent, will not apply to transactions involving representation contracts concluded prior to the 16th of December 2022. You mentioned that date. Even if the transaction, like, for example, a new signing for a player that the agent organized, takes place after the 1st of October 2023. 1st of October 2023 is the date which the mark will be effectively regulated by the FFAR, and the FIFA regulations on working within minutes will be revoked at international level. It is from that date, now the first owners, players, coaches and clubs will be entitled to use licensed football agents only to perform football agent services, unless they do it themselves. They do have that right. Now, the question is, representation contracts made before the approval of the FFAR that expire on or after the 1st of October, and when I say 1st of October 2023, will remain valid until their natural expiration. That is the position. So, if you've got intermediary contracts, do they all of a sudden end or are they not enforceable? If that's the question, the answer is not really. I'm not going to use "it depends." I'm going to use case by case. And I'm going to go down to a few criteria, which I think are important because these are individual. The first one is, was the contract registered with the National Federation? Was there dispute resolution? Was there governing law provisions on there? Remember, under the working with intermediary regulations, it was the national federations that had power over the agents. So it all depends on what the National Federation regulations, that's the paradigm. The other provision is the termination provisions in that previous intermediary contract. If the termination provision said that if the intermediary agent is no longer registered, then the player or the client can be released of that contract, then there you've got a problem. That contract will no longer be valid because they can't keep the registration anymore as an intermediary. Another important aspect is if the agent or the intermediary can no longer act as an agent, you also got to look at the national football agent regulations, how they deal with that. But that doesn't mean an intermediary can't claim back some money for transactions, because if they've done work before the time of the termination, they can claim that. Now, the other thing is, in big markets, England, Brazil, Spain, I'll leave France and Italy out, the maximum was 2 years on an intermediary agreement. So many are expiring. So yes, they're still enforceable technically, but it's a case by case. But most of them will expire. It's a bit like the TPO, the third-party ownership contracts that were in place. They were allowed to naturally expire. There was a banning of those, but FIFA allowed the ones that were in place, especially in South America, and Portugal is a big market, to expire. So I don't expect a lot of intermediate contracts to be in place, or within the next year, most of them will be gone. Now, you mentioned commercial contracts. That's a separate issue. Even the FFAR allows you other services, and you can have a second contract, which doesn't link with having a license. So there's a lot of factors there. But it is clear, and FIFA made that a lot of these contracts before the FFAR came in were allowed to have their natural life.
I just think it's hugely unfair to so many people. They've put the work in, they've done the job, they've probably done the job over the period of time of implementation, and some of them are not going to get paid for the work that they've put in and the efforts they've made, and others are swooping in to take advantage. I just think it's a huge mess and a lot of confusion, and a lot of people are going to be left short in all of this. And I think it needs to be taken into consideration what the effects are going to be, but this sort of makes me reflect back and say on the 16th of December 2022, nobody was expecting the announcement of the ratification of the FFAR. FIFA sprung it. And I will say they sprung it on us. They sprung it on a lot of people. People in the media weren't expecting it. And maybe this is one of the reasons that people couldn't get renewal of rep agreements in preparation for the new regulations. But that's a matter for another day to discuss.
It is. And really, since the 1st of October, to continue to provide agency services, you need a license. And the risks exist for a lot of intermediaries who still have valid representation contracts. They may lose their entitlements. But as I said, it's case by case. You've got to look at the contract. A lot of them were done under national intermediary regulations, not FIFA. So that's something that a lot of people forget, that it is a lot more national systems and not so much FIFA, because you really couldn't go to FIFA for a dispute under those intermediary agreements. You go to CAS, but that costs a lot of money. So that's left people in a very difficult position if they haven't passed the exam or met the legacy requirement to get a license by now. I mean, we've got exams coming up, so there's more opportunity there. Now I want to focus on what we mentioned in our introduction. Four transfer clauses that agents need to keep in mind when having a client who's going to be part of a transfer agreement or a loan agreement. Now, I want to focus on the common transfer agreement clauses utilized in club-to-club transfers and what issues agents need to be fully across. Now, we've seen new trends in transfer agreements, both unique clauses and also the classic transfer clauses, which I'll go to shortly. We also hear that lawyers can delay or obstruct transfers because of transfer agreements are a lot of work and they can be complicated. But as an agent, and this is the agent perspective, when there's a transfer in place, you need to get the clauses right for the player as part of the negotiations. Now, the lawyers tend to draft most of these transfer agreements. The agent has input, especially if they're representing the player, but they may also represent the club because they've got a mandate to chase a player and say, these are what we can offer. So it's something to be aware of in any approach or negotiation. So I'll go through the four clauses and they relate to transfer agreements. The first one is loans with obligation to buy. So if a player is surplus requirements and they can't be transferred out by a club, loaning a player is a very attractive option for a club. If the ultimate aim is to transfer the player, then the loan agreement will be one with an obligation to buy. There is also the option to buy, which is not as determinative, but we're talking about an obligation to buy. And it's composed of setting a loan agreement for a period of time, then fixing the price. The transfer fee is part of that loan agreement between the clubs. And then having in that transfer agreement or that loan agreement a trigger that becomes a permanent move. So it's like a condition precedent. Have they made enough appearances for the loaning club first team? Have they scored enough goals? Or you may have an event. For example, if the club loaning the player secures promotion. So there's two options there. The key thing for an agent here is, from a transparency point of view, is to ensure there's good faith clauses. And what I mean by good faith clauses in this type of agreement is to stop members of the club the player has gone to or have loaned the player, that they stop fielding the player so they don't trigger the clause. Now, you've got to be on top of that. And I would add that that good faith clause is very important. But from the club loaning, they may look to, especially if you're representing a club that's loaning a player, that they're not under any obligation to field the player. It's the manager or the coach who makes that normal determination. Now, the second clause is the buyout clause. Generally speaking, an agreement when one party is entitled to terminate a contractual relationship early in exchange for payment to the other party of a predetermined amount. That's what basically a buyout clause is. You as a player can terminate your contract with the club subject to an agreed payment made earlier than when that contract expires. In international football, buyout clauses are permissible under the FIFA regulations on status of and transfer of players, the FIFA RSTP that all agents have to be across. And in fact, the 2021 commentary to the FIFA RSTP does say a buyout clause confers a right on one of the parties to the contract to terminate the contractual relationship unilaterally and prematurely in return for the unconditional and complete payment of a predetermined sum stipulated in the contract. So it's very, very specifically and also recognized by FIFA as a clause that can exist in contract. In Spain, it's probably the country that has the most in terms of buyout clauses, very fashionable and popular. Comes under state legislation. It's under the Royal Decree, which regulates the special employment relationship of professional athletes. Although it's not compulsory, people think it is compulsory, it's not, but they can put in a clause where there's an obligation to agree on a buyout clause. And that it's promoted to the parties to put that in the sports contract. Now, there are a variety of buyout clauses. They have different names. There's different conditions. There's impacts, there's penalties, there's triggers. They can be called release clauses in other countries, penalty clauses, liquidated damages clauses, or indemnity clauses. They're a little bit different names, but in essence, an early buyout, terminate your contract. And normally the way it works is if a club's interested, they will give the player the money to buy out, or they'll pay the money on behalf of the player to the club that he's currently at. So it's an interesting clause, very fashionable, as I said, in Spain, but growing in a lot of different markets. Now, I'll go on to the sell-on clauses, which is also part of a transfer agreement. So most of these clauses, these four clauses, are in transfer agreements. Now, the sell-on clause has probably become the most frequent tool in transfer negotiations. Why? Financial fair play. Clubs want to pay in installments. They want to spread out their transfer payments because of amortization tax. We mentioned tax a few weeks ago, but that's important. No club wants to pay a full lump sum up front, but also they don't want to pay a full transfer fee up front. So sell-on clauses have become very popular, especially for younger players. Now, what is a sell-on clause? It's defined as a contractual clause agreed between two clubs transferring a player, which governs the financial element of a future transfer, so the next transfer in the contractual relationship. The sell-on clause can be agreed between a club and a player as a financial element of a sporting employment contract. So a younger player goes to this club, and the one that's selling the player say, we'll get a lower fee, but if this player makes it and makes it big because they've got a lot of potential, we'll get a certain percentage of a future transfer. That's pretty much what it means. And this is where agents is very important from the agent's angle, I should say, or perspective, that if you've got a young player, but the current club's asking for way too much money, the sell-on clause option is one of the best to get that deal over the line, because what it does is it lessens the buying club what they have to pay in a transfer because they may not be willing for an untried, talented, but maybe untried player. But also the selling club then knows that if they do make it, they have got another guaranteed income or funds down the track. So it works for both parties. Now, in terms of a sell-on clause, you've got to remember that you need to have a fixed transfer fee. So you've got a transfer fee and the sell-on clause is part of it. For example, it's $200,000 a transfer fee, and then you've got a sell-on clause which sets out how much each party, so a player can also claim, the current club, and also the previous club. So, but you need to set that out. And that is very, very important. And these clauses are very good for younger players, I mentioned, for their potential development. It allows both clubs, the current and the former club, to obtain money from a successful player. So it works both ways. And it also nurtures young talents to do better in bigger competition. The sell-on clause is very popular in Australia and parts of Europe. Now, with the sell-on clause, please note the percentages of who gets what in next sale must be stipulated. I'll make that clear, and the agents need to be on top of this. There are other ways you can have a future transfer fee, so the previous club can make it. There is the profit sharing clause or future transfer payments. They're similar to sell-on clauses. Now, I'll just make some final points here, and I'll have to go back to the RSTP. With sell-on clauses, you need to be mindful of certain limits. For example, third-party influence is not allowed in football or football transfers. And that means when you negotiate a future sell-on, you shouldn't be putting anti-rival clauses or anti-league clauses in there. That's not allowed. So you've got to be very careful. The other thing is not to have a party in there that's a third party. That's not allowed. It's only the current club, the player, and the previous club who sold the player. They should be the parties to the sell-on clause. Now, my final clause is the buyback clause, which is in transfer agreements. Now, this is a clause very unique for big clubs, where it's a mechanism elite clubs, legal departments are drafting into their player transfer agreements, a contractual strategy in transfer negotiations to ensure that the good players who may go to another club come back if their career is progressing. We see that a lot in Spain, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Italy as well. So during the negotiation, the club will say, we want a clause that we can buy this player back at a higher price, maybe. And if you're going to sell them, we can claw them back into our squad. It's a reacquiring for a predetermined transfer fee. This clause is different to the right of first refusal clause, which gives the club who has the benefit of the clause the opportunity to be informed of any deals or potential transfers for that player and make an offer. So it's more of a notification. Whereas a buyback clause, you can buy them back at a certain fixed price. So there's a differentiation between that. So four clauses. We've got the loan with obligation to buy. We know there's a lot of loans out there. We've got the buyout clause. The player can buy out their contract. That's two. Three is the sell-on clauses, which agents really have to be on top of this because this is how you get good young players' deals, the sell-on clause. And four is the buyback clause in transfer agreements. I'm just going to make some final points, Jonathan. In terms of drafting a lot of these transfer agreements, you've got to make sure that you're using the right terminology. Is it permanent? Is it temporary or loan? Make sure that's in the contract. An agent needs to check that, not just the lawyers. The agent needs to check that. With the sell-on fee, very important, and this is where we're seeing more and more sell-on, is it net or gross? And if it's net, what are the concepts that's involved? For example, with a sell-on, you need to also mention that it also covers solidarity, training compensation, agent fees, and how is tax going to be treated. So these need to be also addressed in the sell-on clause. And we know that agent fees is something that concerns agents. So it's also the tax treatment. So they need to be involved in how that clause is worded. Now, we also see a lot of growth in development fees in loans. So clubs are paying other clubs to develop players as part of the loans, paying their salary. Very, very important. Now, I'll finalize it on this. Two other things. If your player is going to a multi-ownership club, they're joining a club as part of an ownership group, the agent checked the contract that they're not signing with the ownership group, they're actually signing with one of the clubs because you want to be playing for clubs and not to be at the mercy of an ownership group where they can just move the player around. Not legal anyway, but just be careful of that. Now, with all these transfers, with all these younger players and sell-on clauses, I think it's a very important area that agents must be aware of in doing deals, especially international deals and deals into big clubs. Jonathan.
It's a really important area and it's a minefield. And I think what comes out of what you've said there is the importance of a second pair of eyes and ears in these situations, whether it be the lawyer, whether it be an agent colleague. And when you're working in a territory that you're not au fait with, that isn't your home territory, that you have advice from that region as well. Because we're all human and we all miss things, especially if it's a rush with the transfer window closing. And hopefully a lot of people will have these things in place and would have looked at them anyway. But a couple of takeaways for me from what you were saying, Peter, and I was listening. I've made some notes. You'll be glad to hear. The loan with obligation or option to buy. I think it's important that people recognize those are very different. I think the loan with obligation to buy is a, for me, and me being a cynic, anybody who's listened to an episode of The Agent's Angle before will know I'm a cynic. I think it's just an element of a buying club kicking the can down the road because of financial fair play and profits and sustainability rules. They can't actually spend the money on the transfer at that time, and so they're going to pay it either 6 months down the line or in the next window or whenever. And I think that's part of it, but the agents need to be aware of how that's going to affect them. The buyout one, as you said, it's a tricky one. It varies around the world. You've got legislative processes there underpinning it, legislative rules, which you need to be aware of, but also the football regulatory rules. And it varies from country to country, as in who pays, when they pay, who they pay, that can affect whether it's permitted or not. And it's been highlighted on some sports documentaries. I can think of a few on Netflix where that's actually been a case to take into account. The sell-ons, again, another minefield. Some regions, they aren't permitted. Some territories, an agent receiving a proportion of a sell-on isn't permitted. The player receiving a proportion of the sell-on isn't permitted. So agents need to be aware of that because it does overlap with TPO, third-party ownership, and TPI, third-party investment. So they need to be aware of that. And the other thing I would say, when there's a sell-on clause, if it's a particularly restrictive sell-on clause, you might well end up with a situation where the club will have the player run down their contract to the very end so that they get the maximum amount of value, because actually selling the player, they don't receive the value that they view as a fair balance to having that player in their squad for an extended period. And that can affect the agents, especially if the rep agreement has expired when that contract wears down. And the final thing, and we're back to FFAR, and we're unsure at the moment with the FFAR as it stands on the prohibition of what FIFA have termed penalty clauses. Now, this is a very grey area at the moment because what FIFA termed penalty clauses may not be viewed as penalty clauses by other people. And that is the case where the player concludes a contract themselves without the agent. Now, for me, if there's a representation agreement there and it's specified in there that the agent is still due their commission, whether they're actually involved in the negotiation or not, that's not a penalty. A penalty is adding something else on top if the player then decides to do the negotiation themselves. But as I said, it's an absolute minefield. A lot of information there, and people will definitely want to listen back to what you've covered there, Peter.
Yeah, a little bit long-winded, but it's very important to highlight these four different clauses. And you mentioned something important, Jonathan. Loan with obligation and loan with option are two different things. And that's more of a strategy thing. Now, the other thing you mentioned with agents, especially in terms of dealing with transfers, lawyers are involved. And it's very important to have some relation with football lawyers because different countries, as you said, with the sell-on, are affected differently. So that's very, very important. I will say this, that this is a big area. Players can do deals themselves, but what if you mentioned before that the agent has done a lot of work? Can they be paid under this rep agreement under FFAR? It comes down to, and I don't want to use the term case by case, if they've done a lot of work and they can showcase that, they've got WhatsApp messages, they've got offers and all that, then they can probably claim part of the fee.
So, in the words of Monty Python, now for something completely different and something that may appeal to some people when they're taking into account those complications over contract clauses and the minefield it is, and who want to get out of the agent's game and opt for a cushy, secure job rather than the strife of being a football agent with non-guaranteed income to an extent, with none other than, you've guessed it, FIFA. A few people highlighted this to me a week or so ago, firstly on jobs in football, and I don't know whether they were joking or being serious in asking me if I was going for it. And subsequently, I think it's safe to say FIFA and various FIFA officials have also pushed the same advertised post on social media, such as LinkedIn as well. And the advertised post is for an education and licensing manager. And this does seem to be for agent licensing education if you look further into the advertised post description. However, the things that caught my eye about this one, Peter, is that one, it's located in Miami. Now, we knew a few months ago that a large proportion of FIFA's legal team were being relocated to Miami with the advent of the 2026 World Cup, which in some ways may make sense with the tri-nation aspect and the complications of that and the legal complexities of the USA. But a lot of people have asked questions if this is a mass relocation and whether it's needed and whether it's indeed permanent. Point two, there seems to be no mention specifically of agent or intermediary experience for this role, whether essential or desired. There is IT, commercial, regulatory, project management, but nothing specific to agents. Which, when you consider the criticism FIFA have had over the whole FFAR saga, that they don't understand the agent's world or business and the practicalities therein, this seems to be a bit of a mistake for me. Three, there's no mention of legal for a FIFA position, which you know my position on this, Peter, as we've discussed it many times, and that at times I think FIFA seems to have more lawyers than a mafia don. And frankly, I think this overload stifles FIFA's mindset, understanding and vision when it comes to good and practical governance and other matters such as agents. And my final point, this job description, the job title, it doesn't actually say agents, education and licensing manager. Now, is this because some at FIFA still see the term agents as something somewhat monstrous and unwanted that they don't want to utter, let alone be associated with a FIFA role? Or will this person be seconded to other departments as well as given certain things in the job description?
Well, Jonathan, this is a very interesting job in Miami as well. As you say, there's not a full clarity of what the position is, but it is related to agents. I will say that the person for this job should have some agency experience and insights. They need to understand the industry, fundamental. Now, in terms of relocating agents to Miami, great part of the world, I don't think relocating the agents section, even though they're hosting the World Cup and I know why the lawyers are going to be there, is necessary. The agent section should stay in Europe with an add-on, because the way the agency is working, it's also regional. It's in the confederations that there should be agent coordinators or members of staff in each confederation who understand the dynamics, the experiences, the business of those different confederations in the agency's business. So yes, have FIFA agent staff around different confederations, but it should be centralized in Europe because that's where a lot of the deals, the actions, a lot of the negotiation, what's happening is there. I don't think it should shift to Miami. But also, this job, quite interesting. And, you know, I'm surprised Jonathan maybe hasn't piqued your interest that much.
I'm not surprised. I just said that out loud. However, what I think we do agree on is that FIFA need a lot more than one addition in the agents division. If they're serious about properly regulating the industry, that is. And it doesn't look to be the case currently or for many years past. Even before FFAR. The agent licensing platform and CPD also need a lot of work. It's still, I understand, riddled with bugs, some of which we're still hearing about. People are having problems left, right and centre. Plus, has there been much progress on the quality and the breadth and the nature of the CPD since it first came into conception? Does it even fit in with developing the knowledge of agents for the betterment of all those affected, not just the agents themselves? I would say not, and that again comes down to awareness of the agent's world. There is also a concern for me here that this may be replacing someone who doesn't want to go to Miami. So is it a substitution of somebody rather than an addition? And thus, it isn't so much an enhancement, but we've got the potential here of losing some experience of someone who's seen the FFAR saga firsthand and has valuable experience in moving things forward and putting things right and ultimately avoiding problems of the last couple of years. And after all of that, for those who are still wondering, no, I won't be applying. I didn't even consider it, to answer your question, Peter. And besides Miami being quite a commute for me, the role really doesn't appeal. And I think some people at FIFA would have me taken out by a sniper before I got within 100 yards of a FIFA office. I can think of a few people who may be eyeing up the post from various national associations. And also the initials M and F may well come into play here at some point in the future.
For me, there are a lot of good people in the agents industry who would add value to this role and should be considered or should be applying. I would never talk you up, Jonathan. However, your breadth of understanding and experience of the agents industry, the business practices, the regulations. Yes, you're not a lawyer, but you have much more insight than a lot of lawyers in this industry, in this football law industry, I would say, because you're also practical. But I'm not here to give you a plug because we're here to inform our viewers. And I will say that it's important that good people work on agent programs, on agent projects at FIFA, and I will leave it at that.
Yeah, to all those who are going to apply, all the best. And I sincerely hope that whoever is appointed is the right person for the job, not based solely on the job description or how they fit the FIFA mold, but that they can help improve things for licensed agents and the agents industry as a whole.
Now, before we go, I just want to mention some names, football lawyers who have written some fantastic articles on the four clauses that I mentioned, besides in the show notes, should recognize them now. Mark Hovell, Jordi Lopez, Luis Torres, Ian Lang, Luca Pastore, Paolo Lombardi, Josep Vandalos, Juan Crespo, and Adrian Lloris. Now, we mentioned last week at the beginning of this episode, we are making some changes to the show. And as such, we are switching to a fortnightly scheduled episodes of The Agents Angle, still coming at the same time, Sunday night European time. But that doesn't mean there won't be unscheduled episodes of the show when there is some time-sensitive story or something of great importance in the calendar on agent matters that we can always schedule in between episodes or flash episodes. We play with the idea of shorter episodes weekly, but we don't want to rush the content. Like today, maybe I did it a little bit with the four clauses, but it's fundamental that we get enough time to explain those four clauses. Things need to be covered thoroughly. And also we risk, if we go too short, losing valuable content because we'll overlook it. We'll surmise it in a very short way.
And it's safe to say, I think we doubted we'd have enough content when we first started, and we've just been inundated with content. But for anyone who's done a podcast with a minimal team and no one full-time and the benefits of financial backing, it's a huge amount of work when things go right. But even more so when things go wrong, such as guests not showing or backing out at a last minute. And it's those times that make you wish you hadn't started it. But we have, and we don't want to let people down who we know have taken the time to listen, follow and subscribe, as well as help us with episodes and give us positive feedback.
Leave us a review, email some questions, and also spread the word of the agents angle. It's an important time in football with everything going on, Super League, agents, big clubs, transfers. Really get the message out there because I think we provide interesting, niche, but important content. Bye from me.
Yes, everyone, make the most of what remains of this transfer window. So until the next episode, whether it be this week or next, take care of yourselves and all the very best.
The purpose of the Agents Angle podcast is to provide news, information and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, the views expressed by guests are their own and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.